Hi, this is Scott Kuprow's podcast called Scott Kuprow Probes, and we have Sarah on this morning, Sarah Clark from
Ready
Sarah
for Probing.
This is a show I do with friends and people whose work I really admire, and in the show, I always think it's interesting.
So I'm in the friend category.
You're in both.
I know,
that's what you're about. Because usually I just say people's whose work I admire, but you're a friend. Very good friend, very close friend.
We are very close friends.
And, okay, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I really think it's interesting to talk to people about what inspires what they say. Anyone who speaks live for a living, politicians, writers, broadcasters like yourself, stand-up comics, I like to ask them, like, how did you come up with this, and why? Why did this happen?
Right.
And usually I have clips, and I can find stuff about people, comics, even writers, I can find them talking about their work on the air. Found nothing about you, nothing. I didn't find anything about
you.
I'm a very private person. You're not, and we'll talk more about that soon, but not in the way you present yourself online in some ways, but in other ways, yes, you are. What's interesting is I could find very little about your work, but I found a tour of your home. Anyway, so that was weird.
That was weird.
From room to room.
I know. Our old house, because we were one of the first people to get those video tours of a home, because we know a guy who, he didn't invent the process of filming homes,
right?
But he sort of, he monetized it on real estate websites.
Well, it looks like you're trying to sell the house,
right? We did. That was our for sale video.
And the house looked, I don't remember it looking like that. It looked great. And
thanks.
You're welcome. No, look, but what it looked like was a museum. Like, this is the museum of Sarah. Sarah's passed. And now we're looking, it looked like you died. Like, the whole family had been killed.
Sure.
It was just weird. They were like, it looked like a restaurant in the dining room. It didn't look very personal, which I remember the house feeling very comfortable.
But we had gotten it all cleaned up,
man,
and finished everything.
Out the corners.
Got it staged.
Yeah.
We were trying to sell it.
It was so funny.
We need to remove ourselves
Sarah's
from the equation.
Sarah's big-ass house tour.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
What it's called.
Yeah. And the views were spectacular.
That was a great house. You've been up there many times, haven't you?
I love that house. Yeah.
I loved it too. You know, the problem with that house was it was just such a pain in the ass to get to through all those winding mountain roads. And then if you forgot the milk.
I know, poor you.
I know. Oh, God. I have to leave my mansion and drive down to the supermarket. Oh,
and the kids
are. It would take 10 to 12 minutes.
I remember you saying there's no kids around to play with because, you know, they're all ritzy adults that didn't bother having children because they want to have a nice life. But it was great,
that house.
Because also, what I also liked about it was things could be happening in the kitchen and the family room area, and I could go in the living room and the guest room and the bathroom and ignore all of you.
Yes, you could.
And just kind of hang out for 10 or 20 minutes and not be talked to. Because now in your house, you know, in your mobile home called a house that you have now, it's
like a double wide, isn't
it? It's beautiful inside. But it's packed with fun.
It is
hard to get away from the fun.
It is really difficult to find a place to get away, because it's half the size of that other house.
Yeah.
But you know what we get to do? Walk to stuff
and talk to one another
and
make eye contact with each other.
True.
Which is awkward, but you do it.
We actually had an intercom at the other house because to get up from the kitchen to my kids' bedrooms was so far away, and I just was like, I'm not going to be the person that yells up the stairs. So we had this little intercom system, so I could say to the hallway outside their room, "Hey kids, it's time for dinner," and I could be pleasant, mom. Not get down here. Or
they'd be like, "Mom, where are you?" You could respond like, "Mommy's angry and in her bedroom having white wine with my headphones on, listening to music. So you little kids, shut up." That would
okay,
be great.
You're giving the wrong impression of
me.
Right. I would never be drinking white wine. It would be vodka for sure.
Because it doesn't leave a trace.
And I wouldn't even answer them.
Well,
so hold on. Before we get all into this thing, my concern is that if you have podcasts, I know you're world famous, Scott. I'm afraid that there are going to be people who listen to this podcast.
I'm huge in Thailand.
Oh, you're huge. Oh, my God. You're huge everywhere.
Brent will tell you.
Because once you get outside the Bay Area, which we're in California, we're in San Francisco, but you have listeners all over the world and fans all over the world. I would like them to know that he's friends with me because I'm wildly talented. I have an amazing morning show in San Francisco. Nobody has any idea what my work is all about.
Right.
You couldn't even find it online.
I was going to introduce you right now, but thank you for doing my job for me.
Sure. Well, you know.
No, you're used to being head honcho. I get it. But
that's true.
No, but what Sarah does, that's what I'm saying. That's why I wanted clips, because it's hard to describe to people that don't know who you are.
Right.
What you do. And what Sarah is a co-morning DJ of a radio show in San Francisco, which sounds great to some people because that's a dream for many people to be on the radio still. But it also sounds like radio. Who listens to radio anymore? And also, if they don't already, and also, it's like, what's a co-DJ? What Sarah does is she's the anchor of a broadcasting network in the Bay Area. Your show has been, for over 20 years, the most listened to radio show probably in Northern California compared to other small towns. And this is the eighth largest market in the country?
I actually think it's the fourth largest radio market.
Well, there you go. It's the fourth largest in the U.S. So the kind of The kind of power Sarah yields seems... Wheels and yields. Well, I like yields.
Actually, just got to correct you. You always correct me.
I know. But
loved it.
I was being ironic. or trying to.
Yield to power.
I was just about to mention a competitor, one of the many who you've seen off. You have competed against so many people who tried to take your position in the Bay Area over the last 24 years. And I was reading about one this morning because I found more information about your competitors than about you online when I was researching you. And one,
I'm a very bland person. I mean, really, I think that the whole hook to my show is that somehow I don't offend anyone. Although I do occasionally.
You have offended people, but yeah, very few.
And yeah, I'm just nice. I'm just a nice lady. I'm easy to listen to. Oh my God.
How many people are listening to your show at any given moment when you're on
air? Bryn, do you know that? I don't really know. They call that the cume, right? Like however many. I don't really know about science. Mm. That seems so mathy to me.
Does it, or is that just something you're saying now?
Because I'm just saying it.
Or
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I'm
but
just
you
simple
do
and
actually,
nice. I don't really know, though, truly.
But there is, sometimes I've been working with you on the air. Only on the air I see this. And there is a, I wouldn't call it cold steel, but there is an impression behind your eyes that you give to people working with you that if they don't cooperate, that they're out. And that is one of the ways you survived, is you are with your original family now, but that family has altered throughout the years so that you can stay on the air. And that's really admirable to me, that you are at one point diplomatic and at the other point completely self-serving, which you have to be in this business in order to continue.
It's interesting that you say that, because I definitely feel like I am kind of loyal to a fault. I'll almost take loyalty too far, to the point where a relationship has progressed past the point where it is at all benefiting. And to me, it's okay. It is selfish. I absolutely want to survive and continue to do this job. But I also feel like what I want is for the show to survive. The Sarah and Vinny show is a family, and yet it's also a business. So when one of the family members goes all to hell, then you got to cut that cancer out of the family.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's harsh and hard, because I refuse to work with people that I don't really like. I'm just past that.
Do you take advice from your Lady Macbeth, also known as John, your husband? Do you take advice from...
I do. Trust him. He's one of the only people I think will tell me, he's certainly not going to pander to me, that's for sure.
If he says pursue that idea on air or cut that person or move on from that, you will take it into consideration?
Oh my God, totally. I mean, don't you feel like you have to have that person in your life?
Well, I didn't used to. My friend Mark used to be that for me when I was spending more time here. Mm-hmm. I think Mark's got a great intuitive sense. And Mark...
And just would be honest.
He is with me about
and
my work.
And is smart
well.
Enough that you respect his opinion.
Mark has inspired a lot of jokes I've written, or has written them for me, and just handed them to me.
Oh my God, my brother would be so jealous to hear that.
Your brother is so lovely.
And he just wants to write jokes for you. He just wants you... You know what he wants? He wants you to think he's funny. That's what he wants.
When we were over there,
my brother is like obsessed with you.
When we were there the other day, Edson, we went to leave. Edson so enjoys being at your house. He so enjoys being around
you. I love
him. My husband really adores Sarah. And to my husband, families are incredibly, very important. He's from Brazil, very close to his own family, and loves watching you with your family, because you seem both like you respect your kids so much. You are... in a way trying to get Sean to go on and do his own thing, and you're supporting whatever he wants to do. And you just want Sean to be whoever he is and more of that.
I'm to be happy.
Yeah. And Edson really loves that. And that's why it's so hard for him to be around me with my family. Because my family's...
fairly dysfunctional.
Well...
just the few... Are we allowed to swear on your podcast?
Oh, they're so fucking toxic. Anyway,
that answers that.
I'm having dinner with them tonight. I've just been texting them on the way here, like, just reminding you all about dinner night, like it's a business meeting. Because I know they'll all be like, oh, some will back out. Anyway, it's just... but with you, with yours, including your brother and your sister-in-law living basically near you right
they
now.
They live right next door, basically.
Well, and taking part in your life, your daily life. Edson's like, God, this is so great. It's like a little village. It's like they created a little village. And but your brother, when I watch Edson watching your brother, it's like Edson's auditioning for, because Edson works in a comedy club, as you know, and manages one in London. And it's like he's watching a comic on stage in awe and in anticipation of what the next punchline is going to be. It's hard for Edson to engage with him, because your brother's always telling jokes.
He has actually said to me that he can't relax in his life, in real life. He can't relax. He's always trying to find a funny thing to say. I'm like, God, that just sounds exhausting.
But you perform for a living. Why do you both perform? so much.
I don't know. You know what's funny is he always was the funny one in our family. Like, I remember dinners where he was just killing us. Like, I've always thought of him as being leaps and bounds more funny than I could ever be. And yet, he's horrible on the radio, and somehow I've made that work.
Have you had him on the show?
He's been on and has just, like, flamed out.
He freezes.
He freezes. He just becomes super unnatural. And I think a lot of that is because it takes time on the air to become who you are on the air.
Yeah.
I am definitely a different person when I'm on the air. I'm braver. I'm way more confrontational. I am able to succinctly put into words my thoughts and feelings on something where I don't know if it's because I'm just so exhausted at 10 o'clock when I'm done that I cannot form more sentences or that I've turned that muscle off. I swear to God, it's hard for me just to pay attention to people in after the show.
Oh, but no, I've been at your house when I've seen you kind of...
Right. I glaze over. I can't do it. It's really hard because I either engage that muscle or I don't. And that's I'm a very different person off the air.
No, we liked how you left the room. You left the patio the other day, and then it's like, "Where's Sarah?" I'm like, "She'll be back in a minute." He's like, "We have to go, right?" I'm like, mm-hmm. And then you came out, and she's like, "Okay, you guys get out." And we're like,
"Well, it was because you knew that was coming.
It's 6 o'clock,
to go to bed.
And you've got to go to bed." I'm like, "She gets up at 4, honey. 4.
3:45, Scott.
For 20 something years, right. It's such a burnout job." And when I said,
"But I live my entire life on that part of the clock. Like, it's not a burnout for me because I'm super strict. I don't drink when I know I have to get up. I mean, I'm like clean living, and then I go fucking crazy on the weekends, which is actually bad. I totally blow my schedule."
And then you go crazy until 6 o'clock, and then
I go crazy on Friday night.
Right.
I recover on Saturday, and I try to get back in my schedule on Sunday. And honest to God, I do it every week. Like, it's actually like I'll tell you something right now. I am going to die on a Friday night. There is no question about it. It is going to be. I'll have gotten home, just started my party early. And it'll be 11:30 on a Friday. I'm predicting this right now. Mark my words. I'm going to croak on a Friday night because I'll be like, what do you got? I'll try that. Let's do it. Here we go. Woo!
Yeah.
And know that I'll be happy. I've had a great life, and I love all the people in my
life. Your kids will miss you, though. They will miss
you. But I've told them a million times. I'm like, look, you know, death is a whole thing. It can happen at any time. What you need to make sure of in your life is that you're square with the people you love. Let them know how much you love them, how great your life was, and be sad, but don't spend your life thinking about it.
Well, when I saw Hereditary, I thought, this is how Sarah's going to go. Did you see that?
I did not.
That horror movie, it's great. Did you see it, Brent, Hereditary?
I did not.
Oh, it's great. It's Toni Collette plays a witch, and then she kills her whole family. And I'm like, this is how Sarah's going to go. She's going to, like, she's going to hit it to a peak. She's an artist, too. She's going to hit it to a peak, a really good artist, and then she's going to set her husband on fire, crawl up in a corner of the room, crawl up because she's a witch, and as her kid... becomes the head of the family, she'll saw her own head off. That's how it's going to go. It's going to be something like that.
Oh.
Because...
Well, I feel like I don't have to see the movie now.
No, exactly. But I just think because none of us can imagine you not being here. It's got to end in a big crash because you're such a part of so many people's lives, including your listeners. When I go to do shows, this is one of the stories I'm going to tell you about this last Saturday up in Sonoma. People, and I've told you this before, but I don't know that it saturates because it's not a part of... Because you're not there. Seeing it, but people talk about you like they cannot live without you. And I am just, and Brent might feel this way too. I'm a pawn in your life, like, to people. Like, they like having me around. They like me on the game board.
You're Sarah adjacent.
Well, they'd like to move me aside and get to the queen. But in the meantime,
but I'm guarded by my bishops and my rooks.
Well, in the meantime, they'll come and see me because through me they hear you, and they. You are them. It's not just that they can emulate you because they try to, but you are them. And I've only seen this with one other performer I've worked with and interviewed, who I'm trying to get on the show, actually. She's a comic in Britain called Sarah Millican, and she's huge, probably the most famous female TV personality and comedian in the UK, if not, you know, some of the English-speaking world, in Australia as well. And she's so down-to-earth and so sweet, and she's so supportive of the other people in her life and has writing weekends at her house, invites comics up. Yeah, she's great. And she's helped a lot of people crawl up, and she then performs in front of stadiums like with like 50 million people or whatever.
Oh, my God,
huge.
Funny.
And I interviewed her on stage once in a room for like 200 people, and she's drinking a cup of tea, and I'm like, do you want some more tea? She's like, I like it cold like this. That's how I like it, but thanks. I couldn't bring her anything. I was trying to, like, what can I give you? And then there's women in the front row about her age, and at one point, she looked at one woman and smiled. The woman said, you're me, I'm you. I have never, ever had that kind of connection with people as a performer. I don't know if you know, but I open kind of cold on stage.
No, I've seen your show.
Yeah.
And sometimes you stay cold.
Yeah. And my
other times you warm right up and you got us in the palm of your hands. Other times it's like, is he trying to shove me in someone's asshole? What's happening here?
Well, a friend of my sister said that when I met her in Fairfax last year, because she brought some friends to the show, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? Anyway, Liz, and her friend later said, he doesn't open warm, does he? I mean, he met personally in real life.
Right.
Which made me laugh. But he's right. Mm-hmm. And you're right. But I can't. And I've seen other performers do this, and I really admire how they bring warmth. They really hold people. They hold them close to them.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I get that from people. When I meet people out there, they really, I mean, I love it. It's so nice when someone comes up and is just like, God, I feel like you always say the thing that I'm thinking. And I honestly, I don't know why. I'm fucking so lucky. Like, I'm just the luckiest person. But then people, like, they'll be like all fancy and stuff, and they're like, oh my God, I feel like I'm just like you, would be great friends. And I look down at myself in my fucking Crocs and my hair that hasn't been washed in 2 days and my shitty thing and my bra that has a hole in the side of it, and I'm thinking, would you though? Would we be friends? Because
you're
like
in a Chanel suit.
I'm not, and right. I'm not holding up my end of the fancy friend, you know, bar. I just...
But they might have read claims online from one of your competitors that you have yielded, I mentioned earlier, who's no longer around, because one reason, because apparently his show wasn't great, but also because he claimed on air and got in trouble for it that you made $1.2 million a year, and people read that stuff, and that's also impressive to people. That's all, whether that's true or not, that's what he claimed, and he worked for the same company you did, and he was pimp-slapped for it. Now, I don't even think he's around anymore, but...
Yeah, but that's not why he got fired.
No,
or anything.
No, not at all.
I make twice that.
Yeah,
Jesus,
of course.
Come
yeah,
on, please.
Ka-ching, ching, baby, right? But I think that your success is also impressive to people. That it is.
Well, it's
it,
impressive to me. Even I'm like, I look around myself sometimes and go, Jesus, you know, I'm not even funny in real life. Like, I think I have everyone tricked. I totally feel like an imposter a lot of times. Like,
but I think
looking
the website,
around going, am I the boss of all this?
But I think your website gets about 500,000 hits a week, and I think to a lot of people, that is a great thing, that you have got your word out there and that,
well,
people know
I'm
who
lucky.
You are.
I'm for sure. I'm grateful for everyone who's ever listened to the show, for every minute that they gave us. I don't want to piss people off. If somebody wrote me a heartfelt thing about something I had said, I'd feel bad and try to apologize. Like, I'm not looking to hurt anybody, which is why it surprises me. Like, I am sort of a bland person. And I wonder, what is it that, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm super grateful for it, but I don't know what it is. I can't tell you what it is, or what, you know, there's no trick in my head. I just come in and I, because you know what I think it is? Here's what I think it is. I forget that we're talking to anybody else. I'm looking at people that I know really well. All of us have that muscle turned on. We're all trying to fill those 4 hours with the most interesting thing that we can find. And I just think that I lose myself in that. That's what I think it is. I don't know where it came from.
I think
from,
it's
but...
it, sometimes it might be something that people find appealing about a politician they vote for. They may not think that they're the best for the job, but they'd like to have a beer with them in a pub. Like, they'd like to stand around and chat with them and have a drink. And maybe that's how people feel about you. Maybe they just feel like you're someone they could have a cup of coffee with and chat for a while.
Really couldn't. I'm too shy. I'm telling you, I'm such an anxious person.
Are you that person off air because you feel like you give so much on and you feel like I have hit a wall?
I do hit a wall, but I will tell you that if I have like a gig to do at night, or if I'm going to go out and be Sarah Clark somewhere, I feel it click on. I feel it. I'll even be bitching to John on our way to a gig. Oh my God, I got to go do this thing, blah, blah, blah. And we get there and the first person goes, oh, Sarah. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much for listening. Hugs. And I feel it. I mean it. I'm not making it up. It clicks on and I am what you need me to be.
So is it robotic for you a little bit?
It.
Which is good.
I mean, I don't want to use the word robotic because I actually want to feel that I am connecting with someone emotionally and that I'm not lying to them. Like, as I meet someone and they like the show, I do appreciate that they listen. I'm super grateful for it. But I am definitely in, I feel like sometimes I'm a split personality, that like I'm able to be that person. But I know that as soon as I get home, I'm going to revert to the introverted, I want to be alone and so things person that I actually am. Maybe I'm both people. Maybe I am actually both people. I'm certainly the turned on person for a lot of the time.
Well, I think people do have a professional personality and an off air personality. And
right.
I think your family won't let you get away with the professional personality at the house, probably.
Oh, that's, they just don't even want to talk to that person. They like the goofy mom who dances and sings in the kitchen, and you know, the way people are in their normal life. We have all our little family stupid family jokes that just make us laugh. And John is super musical, and I love to sing. And we have songs about everyone, like, and everything. We have songs about laundry. Mm. We have songs, I mean, and putting our fat clothes on at night, you know? Oh, I got to go get our fat clothes on. Motherfucking fat clothes, baby, this evening. Like, we're so goofy. We make jokes that Alexa must be listening to us and thinking, I got to tell someone about this. These people are clearly hiding with their spies.
Call the FBI or something.
Right, there's something going on.
When you moved here, 97, right? Did you have any intention of staying this long? Because you had been in other cities with Vinny.
We met in Philly. We actually started working together in Philly. So then I was doing mornings in Philly, met Vinny. I had worked in St. Louis. That was my first morning gig, was in St. Louis. So I'd done 2 years of mornings there.
And why St. Louis? Why?
I was hired there to do middays, and it was my first full-time radio gig. I'd been kind of plugging around and moving here and there, and I knew the PD. And he said,
"What's the PD? Tell
people." The program director of the radio station. Right. His name was Ken Anthony, and I'd met him briefly in Los Angeles. He'd hired me to do part time at KLOS, and he was immediately fired afterward. And then 3-4 months later, he called me and said, "Hey, I'm in St. Louis now, and we're putting a radio station together. You want to come and audition?"
And John and you were married at this time.
We were not married by then. We married that year, though. That was '93. And that was my first full-time radio gig with St. Louis.
So he picked up and went with you to St. Louis.
We picked up and went. We moved a few times for his stuff because he was trying to get into the music industry. So we had gone to Florida.
As a musician or as a songwriter?
He wanted to write or as a musician, whatever. He just was looking to, and he actually really wanted to get in at Disney because he wanted to be a part of that kind of machine.
Yeah.
So we moved to Florida to do that. And then we moved to Los Angeles. He had a cousin out there, and we were just going to give that a try. And that's when I got the gig at KLOS. And from there, we had agreed kind of early on, whoever is going to make the most money will get to call the shots as to where we go.
Yeah.
And then I started to make all my money, and then we moved.
Yeah.
What was the original part of this question?
I was just asking you,
so when we got
to Philadelphia
from
St. Louis, and that's where you met Vinny.
Yes, but I had only spent a few years at the most at any of these places, so I didn't know. I just thought of it as another gig.
Yeah.
And they had sold the station in Philly. I needed another gig. We landed here, of all places, at a destination market. Like, who doesn't want to live in San Francisco?
Right.
Well, I guess Trump probably doesn't want to. But it was such a beautiful city. And I felt like we just landed at exactly the right time. Like, we were the right show at the right time on the right station. Alice was just taking off. That's the name of the station.
And Vinny came with you.
Oh, yeah. We came together. Yeah. And I just had no idea how long it would last. In fact, when he got drunk and fell off the show about 5 years in, I was like, well, it's been a nice 5 years. You know, I guess I'll find something else. And somehow, like you said, I managed to pull in this person. I've survived. Managed to survive. So I did 7 or 8 years without him, and then
but
he came back.
You wanted to syndicate. That means go nationally in the country. And then,
well, look, I want to do anything that's going to make me more money. I am a horrible capitalist at heart. But we are very San Francisco-centric. We're a very local-feeling show, even though none of us is originally from here. Well, Bryn, you're from here. But the principles
Bryn's
on the show.
Bryn's from Colma, actually. But yes, he says he's
from
Florida.
Dad.
Yeah.
He's from Florida.
Right.
Born in Florida. But we've just, I don't know how we've persevered, but here we are, it'll be 23 years.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to me. And it feels great. Now you know, they're almost like legacy shows, or is that even the word for it? Like a show that's just, I feel part of the fiber here. I feel part of the city and what's happening with it. And the thing that I realized, because I really thought, how long can you be a DJ for? I was like, God, by the time I'm 50, you know, who's going to want to listen? But your audience
grows with you.
They grow older.
And
they raise their kids.
Too, yeah.
Right. We always say, raise the next generation. Oh, you're starting off your kid right. So that, you know, it's like a mark of pride to raise your kid as a Sarah and Vinny listener.
Well, it's so interesting because radio had always been my kind of a great love for me as a kid. And the first thing I got at university was my FCC license so I could host a show at university. And then I met my first boyfriend and the show was in the morning. I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed. So I gave my show up. Oh, God. Anyway, it wasn't much of a big, it was a big surprise.
Well, you're great on the radio. I mean, I loved you the first time you ever came on.
Oh, right.
I was just
Thank you.
Oh, my God. When you were an old-ass 34-year-old.
I know.
He's so old.
I know. But I was hosting a Show Tunes show at University, UC Irvine.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You must have loved that.
Oh, my God. And it's a big surprise, I'm sure. Anyway, so then when I came up here to move up here from L.A. because I wanted to do stuff, and I became a comic, and then The only way I got on the radio was because the woman who produced the show, Alex Bennett, who used to be a radio DJ and very well known on the Bay Area, and he had comics on every
morning. He'd been here for years.
With a live audience, too, which was unusual in the studio. And she thought I was someone else, so she booked me on the show. She got my name wrong.
Oh.
Yeah. And when I showed up, she's like, wait, you're not that guy. I'm like, no, I'm me. She's like, oh, just go on. And because, you know, 6 a.m., what could happen, right?
Exactly.
And Alex totally knew what he was doing. And if he wanted me off the air, he'd kick me off in 5 seconds anyway if he didn't think I was funny. But we'd gone to the same high school.
You and Alex.
Yes. And he graduated from the first class of Drake, and I had been class of 81. And we kind of hit it off. And Alex wanted a cause, and there weren't any openly gay people on the circuit playing comedy live. And he's like, I'm going to get you in clubs. And we really, I mean, when he went off the air, I thought, that's it. I'll never get on the radio again. I mean, over a 4 or 5 year period, I fucking fell in love with being on air. I mean, on the radio.
It's a bug. Oh, it bites you.
And we were doing live radio, live comedy shows at 6 a.m. from like the Punchline. Mm. I was doing stand-up in front of a hugely drunk audience. It was so much fun.
6 a.m.
Oh, my God. And then he'd interview. I mean, there's
that's
nothing
living,
like it.
Right?
Well, also, it was a great way to build
an
audience.
No, he was a legend.
He was great. But he was really generous to me. And it was a fantastic way to find an audience.
Right?
Because what you want to do, like what you do, and what I've tried to do, and what I've seen very successful people do, who I know, is they find an audience that has at that point been undiscovered or unrepresented. And there are performers I know, like, I can say, that won't make any sense to you, that in the UK, but here too. I mean, you could even say someone like Dave Chappelle, who's huge now, might have found on TV an audience that felt they'd been ignored watching television, like young urban professionals or a mixed ethnicity community,
right,
who didn't see their kind of comedy on television. You know, that kind of thing. And oftentimes it's unintentional. But I had found an audience through Alex that were like, we'd like something just a bit younger and different, because I was young at that time. And then it was gone suddenly, and it was really a heartbreak for me. And then I happened onto your show because the Punchline here in the city were like, well, there's this new couple in town, but we don't know what
couple.
They do.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. I thought you were married when I showed up. I seriously thought that you were a couple. And they're like, yeah, they do this thing. Do you want? And the woman said, do you want to go on? I'm like, well, yeah. Oh, God.
Where I might is as it? Well give it a try.
Right. And there was a tiny studio down wherever we were. It was a different place. And it was just you two. And you said, and that was it. Just you two. Because your boss, who's a really fun guy, was in the corner office listening but didn't come out. I'm like, this is a closet. It's a disaster. And I got in there. And you guys let me say whatever I want, like Alex did.
Mm.
And I'm like, this is good. And you laughed at my jokes at like 7 a.m. And I must say, there was the added great thing about Vinny being so cute. I was so drawn to him. He was so giggly and sweet.
Well, you guys have always had a special thing for each other.
But do you remember that there was a sculpture of his torso that you had?
It was not his torso.
It was his ass.
It was his ass.
A sculpture of his ass.
The lucky butt,
yes. Mm-hmm. And you, I don't know, I just couldn't take my eyes off of it. Anyway.
Well, of course not. We actually had it plaster cast. It was his actual ass.
Yes, it was.
It was because what had happened is he had gotten a pair of pants from the 49ers, and he had worn them 2 Sundays in a row, and they'd won both Sundays. Mm. And then he started talking about it on the air, and that weekend he did it again, and they won again. And then we, you know, as you do, you start talking, and like, oh, that thing's a magic, you got a magic ass over there. We should get that plaster cast. And the next thing you do, we had it done. They put a 49ers logo on it. By the way, they started bringing it to the sidelines, and it was there at the games right up until they lost. And then guess what happened? It got smashed by the football team. Oh, my God. But it's so funny that you remember the lucky butt. We had little keychains made of it.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
But his ass really catapulted us up.
But those kind of things do, you know. And
little dumb things that the audience is in on the origin of them.
And also, use that being a very attractive on-air voice, too. Mm-hmm. You all, I remember, one day she said, because she's in a separate studio at that point, and we were talking, and I was yelling about something, and she piped in, she said, can you stop saying fag on air, please? Because, again, you guys let me say whatever I want.
Right.
And it's just great that you have a team that is both supportive, but also everyone's in position, like a football team, doing the job really, really effectively.
Right. We all know our roles, and we all do them very well. We're a pretty well-oiled machine now. I mean, after 23 years, you'd hope so, right?
Yeah. But do you miss, because you are, like we talked about earlier, you're a performer, your brother's a performer, even Debbie, your brother's wife, to a certain extent.
Oh, they're performing for you, for sure.
So, I love it. When he's a little joke, and she just rolls her eyes.
Well,
and
she's
looks
been
off to the
married
side.
To him for long it's enough so that she is funny. Just like, oh my God, did I really just hear that?
Oh, and she'll say, no, to him, no, it's not like that. Anyway, and then she'll tell the story how it actually is. But they remind me of my parents a bit, because my dad's a real storyteller. Mm-hmm. And when he and my mom got together, she'd be like, no, Nick, no, Nick, no. It's like she'd correct him again and again, which I really thought was funny. But I guess every couple has their shtick.
Right, definitely. Well, and no one's more into or more over that person than the person who shares their life.
And I love how you say, no, I want my house back in 2 years. So you have a plan, too, like for them, and they have a plan. I just like how everybody works together. It's just, this is why I want to go visit Edson in Brazil. I may never meet his family because they don't know about us.
Yeah, they don't know that their son is gay and married to you. Yeah. Although he insists that he's only 10% gay.
Yes. Although
10%?
I'm his second husband. But yes.
What?
10% gay.
What?
Yeah, he's been married before.
What?
Yes.
To another man?
Yes.
How am I just hearing about this now? I've known you for 30, well,
whatever,
20 plus,
three decades. And yeah. Well, it's a personal story. Maybe I'll tell it to you.
All right.
But
did you know this?
I did not.
It was someone else. You know, when I met him, he was just someone else. And so then, you know.
You stole him and broke them up? Did he have to go through a divorce?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so it's interesting.
He was only 18 at the time, of course.
Exactly.
Didn't he just turn 36?
Barely. Yeah,
What does he say he just turned?
He says he just turned 38. His actual age is 42.
Here's the thing.
Though.
When I first met him, he was 35. And even at that point, that seemed unlikely. And that was at least a decade ago.
Yeah.
At least.
He says it's the lack
of
sleep that makes him look older.
I see. He doesn't look old. Yeah. He just doesn't look 35.
No.
Or 38.
He's a good-looking 42-year-old.
Oh, he's a great look. Oh, my God. 42, please. 45.
Well, his passport says 42.
All right, I'll go with his passport.
But he says, Caporo, Brazil, they get the paperwork wrong. I said, but hey, they got your name right. And anyway, the hospital wouldn't get the date wrong. No, Caporo, it's my dad. He was drunk, and he told them the wrong date. Told
God.
Who the wrong date?
Yeah,
because it's on your birth certificate.
They anyway, know the day you came in.
His mother wants him to be younger, because in Brazil, you know, the youngest is really the youngest. And I think that she wants him to, she infantilizes him so that she feels younger. And so the family
feels.
Well,
they still sleep in the same bed when he comes to visit.
When
you have to move out of the house so that no one knows that you guys are together.
That's true. And he sleeps in the same bed when he sees
her
in Brazil.
That's rough, dude. How are you going to handle that?
No, I didn't mind that. I was here anyway. You know, actually, I got enough bullshit I fucking deal with. Do I really need in-laws? Serious fucking Lee? Look, it's fine. I got a lot of family. I got a lot of friends. I've hit a wall many, many times where I've been like, okay, I need a week alone where I just didn't talk to people for 7 days, because it's like, I'm also, and I know this sounds so pretentious, but some of my family doesn't understand this when I'm here. They want to see me more. But by the way, I'm involved in the creative process. I'm writing a new show right now. I'm playing Edinburgh. I'm doing The Fringe this year.
Yeah, you're not here on vacation.
No, exactly. I tell them that all the time, and my husband.
I'm here to work.
In a way, I'm busier here than I am in the UK.
Hell yeah,
half the time.
You are. This isn't even your home base. So of course you
right,
are.
Right. But it's my permanent residency, so I've got to keep it going.
Right. I forgot. I'm sorry. You're on vacation when you go to England.
No, but this is legally my permanent residency to tax people too. And so I've got to keep this residence, you know, alive.
Yes.
And when I do shows here, like in Sonoma on Saturday, I produce those shows, and that. People think that this shit just happens. You know this about the radio probably, too. They think that it's just little fairies running around and push buttons and stuff for you. I mean, you do have a few people working for you, which I don't, which I really admire.
Mm. I know. Actually, we have a bigger organization than I'm even aware of sometimes. Sometimes I do just show up and go, oh, look at all this. This is great.
Yeah. I mean, Brent's family.
But you
got
to put the whole thing together.
He sponsors the station. Yeah, I do. So in Sonoma on Saturday, we show up at this gorgeous steakhouse that my father used to bring us to when we were kids.
This is Real and Brand?
Real and Brand.
Okay.
But it was called like the Swiss Italian house. And my father, because we go to Sonoma a lot when I was a child because my dad really liked it. The square, though. But he found this place kind of off the beaten path. It's really close, but still in the countryside. And it had like a huge fireplace and murals of Switzerland on the walls. Mm. I don't know what the food was like, but it was a family-style restaurant. And then I found it online, and the guy approached me because he's a huge fan. Kevin Kress is a huge fan of yours.
Hi, and
said, Kevin. Hello. Do you want to do a show here? So we went by, and the room is beautiful, and it's a proper stage. Your band, it's large enough for your band to perform there.
Oh.
It's beautiful, and they do a lot of live music there and comedy. So I thought, this is perfect, right? So
how did it go on Saturday?
They were serving dinner up until, you know, past. There was just 150 people showed up. I mean, we had that number on Eventbrite, but I didn't think at 100, I said, honey, let's block it at 130, because that's a lot, right, before we got there. And Edson was running the room. Now, he runs large rooms in London, but it's different here because people, your audience are, I wouldn't, oh, what do I call them?
Just say it.
They're fucking high maintenance, and they need a lot of attention, right? And they are excited, but they don't know. When he checked them in, they wanted to have wristbands on their arms, so they knew who isn't there for the show and who's there to leave after dinner. And people are like, I don't know how to put this on. So Edson, because of who he is, they wanted to talk to him, too. I think it was a little shtick, a game to get him in. He had to put the wristband on 150 in 35 minutes before the show starts. So he had to do that, go person to person.
And talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
And tell them how he knows you and what your house is like and stuff. Mm. And what your kids are like and what John's like and what's your mom really like and all that. Right? And the show's 8 o'clock, 8:05, 8:10, 8:15. I see people with their arms crossed waiting for the show to start because they didn't show up for the dinner. They just showed up for the show.
Yes. Yep.
But about half the room was just there for dinner. And when you would check in with them, they're like, oh, wait, there's a show going on? Yeah, it's a comedy show. Oh, we'll stay for that. So here's the money. And so they don't know who I am or what I do. I also had two support acts going on before me. Who are, one of them is Toria Van Gruel, is brilliant, and he's from the area, so they fucking loved him because he knew all the corners and bars and jokes of the locals and stuff, the politics. And the opening act was great. Tony's really sweet, and they really went for him too. But the waiters are still throwing plates of food at people. It's like Hello Dolly, where they're coming out of the kitchen, like spinning plates. Oh, wait, is this your cheesecake? And they're serving, the bar is still open for dinner as well.
Oh,
all these
God.
People at the bar, and one woman's.
So it needed to be delineated.
Yes. And
Needed to be a time when everyone who was,
yes.
Nobody buying tickets at the table.
And we had the dog with us, and people were complaining about the dog in the bar. And Edson has to get the dog out to the car, like he's crying, I don't want to leave her in the car. And he's taking care of the same. And,
so it didn't go smoothly, but how many people did you walk? Let me ask you that.
No, nobody. I don't think anyone walked.
How long did you do?
I did 55 minutes.
Oh, look at you.
I did an hour and 5 and a half on Bay the night before. But that
yeah,
room was...
Yeah, you got a 45 is the perfect
but
length.
55...
55 is good for you because I've sat an hour and a half on
I know,
shows
yeah, I know.
Where I was like, oh my God, please stop, Scott.
My eyes are bleeding. I know. So, but there were two women in the back in Chanel with glasses of white wine standing watching the show, perched up against a doorway that led out to this beautiful patio. And they're just watching me. And like, he's like, no, I checked them already. They're here for the show. I'm like, are they? Because they're looking at me like they don't know what's going on. And then I realized, looking at the rest of the audience when I'm on stage, I said to him later, did someone leave me? He said, Kapoor, half those people didn't know who you were. So I'm telling like the first 10 minutes of pedophile jokes to a room full of Sonoma people who showed up in a Mercedes eating really nice steaks. And they're like, what the and someone, they were there for a family reunion in the front row. Yes.
Wait, and they, were like, and they didn't know who
you
were
there
didn't for
know.
A family reunion?
One woman, I think, did. And she told me later, I thought it would be funny. Anyway, the seven who didn't, right? She's like, I don't. And there was this girl in front.
No.
I don't. I can't cut my steak. I can't see through the tears. And then her brother was sitting behind her, I thought was her father. And he got up to get drinks and kind of stumbled and came back. I'm like, you're not doing very well. But drunk, aren't you? No, I'm fine. And I'm like, I'm fine, team. I thought he was making fun of my voice. He actually speaks that way. He's had some sort of something happen where his voice is like this now.
Oh, that's really sad. That is too bad.
So
oh, you made fun of a
set.
Guy with a handicap.
A little bit. And then there were four people who didn't want to pay. And Edson's like, no, you're going to pay. No, we didn't come for the show. We came for dinner. We're going to stay. Edson's like, you're going to fucking pay or I'm going to cut your fucking head off. He's like,
oh, that's a great way to make friends.
A double Virgo.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's like a split personality.
But, well, he runs
he
a comedy club.
Get rough.
Well, yes, he can.
I've seen him get a mad face on where I went, oh my God, who's that?
Do you know I forgot that? But we were at a baseball game, a Giants game yesterday, and my friend who invited us said, well, last time we were here with you, the first time we SN saw a game, he was asking questions, and someone in front of us from another part of the country were there to support the Cubs or something. We're like, why would you go to a baseball game if you didn't know anything about it? And Edson started a fight with him, lasted for about a half hour until he had his fist out like this.
Oh, it's...
So anyway, and Danny reminded, I forgot. I blocked some of it and forget about it. Anyway, so, but anyway, Kevin was like, no, please, darling, I'll handle this. This is my restaurant. So he did handle it himself and it all took care of itself. But anyway, there's all this pandemonium.
This man threatened to kill us
if
we didn't pay for the show.
And we thought we cut it at 130, but so many people showed up. Right?
That's great.
It was great.
That's good.
It was fantastic. And Torrio, the guy who supported the show, the comic, said later, I saw him last night at a Sunday night show at the Mont. He said, you know what? The frenzy is part of it. Just let it be hectic.
Right.
Just let it be crazy. Just let the kitchen...
Once the night arrives, you just be the performer who's waiting backstage.
But
breathe.
I'm such a control freak.
You are.
But that's because, I mean this, and I'm just saying, I want the show to be good because your audience has shown up in Sonoma. They found sitters. They paid... to me, it's a lot of money.
I'm glad that matters to you.
that's the only thing that matters to me is the audience. I mean, the promoters, the other people involved, everything else. I mean, Kevin, it was his restaurant. He takes care of everything else. I take care of everything on stage, right? That's my job. And I wanted it to be something where people could just sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Bottom line, would you do that room again? Or if you did, would there be different processes?
Well, when I talked to Toria last night, I saw him at the Punchline. I said, what should I do? He said, don't do anything. Leave it. People had a great time. No one complained, did they, afterwards? I said, no, I didn't get a complaint except about the dog. He's like, then just leave it.
And don't bring the dog next time.
Well, we got home, and we got home late. Edson fed the dog, and I woke up at 5 a.m. with dog shit all over my dining carpet. She shit in our house. And I'm like, I'm telling Sarah. And he's like, please, come on, don't tell Sarah. I'm telling Sarah. He's like, because she'll tell you never to get a dog, and I want to get a dog. I'm like, honey, So that's the only bad thing that happened.
I don't know
but
why you want that.
Three little
in your
piles
life.
And a little triangle. She's so sweet. And she's skulking around the house like an evil cartoon dog, like that thing the dogs do when they know they're bad.
That's a pretty good dog, but the whole shitting in the house thing.
I know. But we fed her late. It's not her fault. The show was crazy. It was a hectic night. But it was really something for me where I thought, you know, maybe Sarah's right. Maybe I stand in the way of my own success because
I've said that to you for years.
But I want a controlled environment where everything that happens is because I've made it happen.
I don't know. Like, what would be a good anti-anxiety medication for you?
Oh. Well, I've been on a few.
And?
They fucked up with my sleep, which I didn't like.
Because
my sleep
about
is my thing.
Those kind of things for people who are big personalities. Like, I just wouldn't want you to be a dulled version of yourself. Mm. Like, I wonder about that. Like, and I don't really know if it dulls people down. I do know some people that they've really helped. Mm. But I can't picture you with your edge gone.
It was hard for me because what it also did at the time, this is a long time ago, was it played with my libido, which is a huge part of my personality. As a single man at the time and a single gay man, I've been having dinner with some friends here who are my age a bit older. And it's very, very difficult if you're a gay man in San Francisco to feel that wane. To get older. That's a huge thing for men in general.
Have you tried testosterone?
The doctor won't give it to me because my levels are fine.
Oh.
And it's fine now.
Have them keep checking because there can be a quick decline.
There can be. And I would feel it.
That's an all-over thing. That's a mood thing. That's an energy thing.
And a bone mass, a muscle mass thing. Yeah. It's a lot of health thing. That's why the NHS is covering testosterone support now.
They say, though, if you do a lot of testosterone, that it can actually cause prostate cancer.
Well, that's why they won't give it to me because my father and both my uncles have had it.
You know what, though? They say every man, if you live long enough, you'll get it.
I get tested for prostate cancer every 6 months. They have to.
Well, you love that.
No, they do blood tests now. You're funny. But I do like that.
I know, I am funny. Okay, so did you learn everything you wanted to about me?
Well, no, but it's...
Because it kind of turned into a show about you. I don't know if you noticed. And I'm done talking about it.
I know. But no, I want to talk to you about your film work.
No, you don't.
Yes,
don't be
do.
Fucking
shut
ridiculous.
Shut up.
I have 45 minutes already.
No,
what
shut up.
What do you think
up.
I have all day?
We have 7 more minutes left. Hold on.
More minutes? What is that?
The guy, Jeff Woody. Do you remember this guy, Jeff, quote unquote, Woody Fife? Was that his name?
Oh, from Woody, Tony, and Ravy show?
He's the one who quoted that you had made that much money on the air. And then
doesn't know.
He's gone now, right?
Oh, he's in St. Louis, I think,
Oh, my
actually.
God, right?
Or he's syndicated or something.
He got punished the way you were at that time in your life, but you've been... Because St. Louis... Ooh.
Well,
it's a punchline for a lot of comedians. Yeah. It is. A lot of the country knows. Why do you hate dogs? I forget.
I don't hate dogs.
Yes, you do.
I hate dog owners.
Why?
Because some dog owners leave their shit in the park. And I can't tell you how many times I've stepped in dog shit. I hate, and sometimes I hear somebody's dog barking all night long. That's what I hate. Dogs are fine. I lost a dog when I was a senior in high school, and I never fucking got over it. And I said, I'm never getting another dog. They just don't live long enough for me.
It's feelings. It's feelings.
It is feelings. I don't hate dogs. Everyone says I hate dogs, but I don't. And I have cats. My other cat just died.
Two of whom you've killed.
But yes, I've killed all my cats. The thing is, I don't get attached
to
them the
way
I do.
You fed them to coyotes, your cats.
Oh my God.
You've
you're right.
You've totally
I did.
Fed them
it's
to
totally
coyotes.
My fault.
You heard them crying, you didn't let them in. We've talked about this. Anyway, yeah. It was weird that you let people into your. I do, again, looking online for information about you, I find there's so little
about you. That's because I'm very unremarkable.
Or incredibly private, and maybe
I'm
that's
not
part of
private.
Success.
There's nothing about me that I haven't said on the air or in the secret. I'm telling you, there's just not that much. I don't. You know what it is? I don't get in trouble.
Yeah.
If I got in trouble, there'd be plenty of stuff.
Yeah.
You know. But that's it. I'm bland.
If a cop pulled you over and you had a couple of grams of coke in the car, that would be.
Listen, I think of my notoriety. It's like, oh my God, she's a cokehead.
What do you think would damage your career at this point in America and in the world? everything is online and everything seems to boost people's.
Oh, I could find a way to
What's
ruin my career.
What's the one thing that you think
I think that if I was to, let's see. I mean, it would come down to just saying unacceptable shit on Twitter. That's how you do it. That's how you ruin shit.
People go to jail for that stuff sometimes.
Oh, I don't know. What?
In the UK, they put people in jail online.
Well, sure, if I was like spouting hate speech, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it would be a little out of character for me.
What would you have to say on Twitter that you think would screw up your career?
I don't know. I think that, you know,
a real personal attack
on somebody. I'm actually informed on politics, but I don't talk about them.
Why don't you discuss politics on your
because
show?
Because well,
I bring it up and you go like, yeah, no. Anyway, so, oh, look what they're doing. The Kardashians and stuff.
We like to consider ourselves a place where you can get away from all that. Because in my own life, even with people that are on the same page as me that I'm not going to get in an argument, I find that I get my anxiety levels go through the roof. I'm very upset with what's happening in the country right now.
What are you upset about?
So many things. Let's just start with the whole Endangered Species Act being rolled back. Are you fucking kidding me? The head of the EPA right now is a guy who spent his entire life suing the EPA.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got problems with that. That's just thing one. Look, see, this is why. This is why I don't do it. Like, honest to God, Bryn knows. Because...
But your governor's a friend of yours, and he's left wing.
He's actually great. Are you kidding me? The first thing he did when he got into office was like, gay marriage is legal. I'm like, oh my God! This is amazing! Anyway, I don't like to talk about politics because I don't like who I am when I talk about politics. I get very riled up, and I actually get stupid.
Preachy.
Well, it just...
It becomes less of a conversation.
Right. I can't listen. I hate opposing viewpoints.
And does Vinny want to discuss politics?
No, Vinny
sometimes?
Doesn't want to. Neither one of us really want to. And we're fairly aligned in a lot of our thoughts. But we have made a conscious decision to be a place where you can get away from that. Because there's nowhere else.
Yeah.
Even like late night. I love late night TV.
It's
monologues.
It's all Trump 24-7, though.
It is all Trump 24-7.
Which is what Trump wants.
Of course it is. Good for him.
That's why this impeachment thing really bothers me in a way. Because I mean,
don't
yes,
see,
kick
you're
him
doing
out.
It. I don't want to do it.
I'm just saying the impeachment. The impeachment thing's going to make the next election all about Trump again.
Yeah.
All
well,
about Trump.
Look, it's always going to be all about Trump. I mean, I honestly just can't believe
he's
that these
so good.
People
God,
are...
I envy him. Jesus Christ.
He's not good. What he is?
No,
is
like what he does. He's such
the party.
A great. He's the great, best stand-up comic in the world. The stuff he says, half
he
the time,
is
we can't keep up with
crazy
him.
Crazy person.
Oh God,
who
he's
is mentally
nuts.
Ill? I
but
mean,
he's so fit. He could sell out a room.
Oh, he sells out giant stadiums.
Oh, my God. But your film work.
No
anyway.
Film. I was in Cars.
You have a film that's in post-production. That's what I'm asking you about. Or pre-production or something.
What are you talking
something.
About?
It's called... wait, I found it. Hold on. I got my glasses on.
You know there's an actress named Sarah Clark? It's not me.
No, it was part of your list because there were other films on that list.
Here's the films I've been in. I'm a voice on a radio in the first scene of Flight, which no one listens to because there's a naked chick in that thing.
Hot.
And I
totally
am the
hot.
Voice of Corey Turbowitz, she's a journalist in the movie Cars, the first movie.
Yes.
And I have a scene with Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Oh. But of course, I wasn't in the room with him. I just did his, I did the lines and he did his lines.
Right. What about your
That's it.
What about your TV series with No Name that you guys had in 2007? What happened to that?
It was really just clipped up pieces of it. It was our show. They filmed the show every day. And then we had a lady who clipped a show together every night. Oh, that was fun. No one watched it.
Tedious. What about America is Still the Place? That's the film.
I'm not in that. You
I play
am in that.
Lieutenant Joni Pfeiffer.
I am a voiceover in that.
Oh.
Yeah. And Joni Pfeiffer was my first female PD, and I said, oh, I'll be Joni Pfeiffer.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
So you could do more. You might be a film star someday.
I'm not a film star. I have no desire to be. I cannot act. I have no capacity to do that.
I know, Bryn. God, he's showing me Bryn, we have to go over a bit because we're going to edit some of this because some of it's garbage, including the parts where you didn't join in. You're an on-air personality too, Bryn. Anyway,
yeah, Bryn.
I didn't really.
We're not clipping any of this. This is fucking gold.
and
audience in the UK is going to be like, who? What? Next.
Two more questions. You mentioned it already, but your brother, he joins you live on air, and that's not going to happen very much anymore.
He can. He doesn't even want to. He knows that he just clams up. Yeah, he is too. He's a very self-conscious person. Mm.
But you're both. Like, you know, so you
oh,
do
we
it for a living.
Set each other up.
Is it your mom? Were you dying for attention with your kids? Is that what happened?
I guess we must have been competing for attention.
Because your dad's really calm, too. And it's like
my dad's pretty funny, though. He's like,
he is.
You know,
yeah.
He'll yuck it up.
But she whips people up and makes them jump around for her, I think. She makes people jump their hoops.
She definitely has her needs.
Right. Will live radio last? That's the last question. We'll talk about that.
You know,
Because some people
see
it.
I hope so.
Is it gonna,
but it's funny because more people are listening now than...
that's what Brent said. Your numbers are huge.
It's unbelievable. But you know
Brent says a lot of shit, but I believe...
He does say a lot of shit.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's sort of the one medium of all the changes that have happened in the world with the advent of just the technologies that we have in streaming and podcasts and all the other things you have to listen to. It's... People still need to get their traffic in the morning and... Without having to, you know, you're not supposed to look at your phone. I suppose you can get your traffic anywhere else. I think that we got in at a time where, I don't know, maybe we're the last bastion of it. Like, people will stick with us because we're their friends and they like the show and it's easy enough to push the buttons on your radio, or you can just get it at radio.com, and which is an app. Please download it and listen to us wherever you are on Earth. but that, it still has a purpose, especially on a local level. I don't know what the future holds for it. I know we're not doing a farm league the way we used to. People used to get a shot overnight, but they've eliminated so many. I mean, radio has just like every other business. They look for ways to save money, and a lot of it's automated now. A lot of people do voiceovers and are in many different markets.
Yeah, Brent told me that. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Are you worried about what's going to happen in the future? Because you're slightly apocalyptic sometimes.
I am. Oh, my God. I definitely have my...
I just read the story about this guy in Sydney. He's a famous urban survivor, and he's off the grid in this house, but he's moving to the countryside from Sydney, Australia, because he thinks the planet's going to end in 3 to 5 years.
Well, I hope he's wrong. But I'm not going to live my life worrying about that. I really can't. I'm going to shit the bed of something. So.
Just don't litter.
But I'm really hoping it's a Friday night at 10 p.m. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
Thank you, Sarah Clark.
Thank you, Scott.
You've been marvelous. Capurro. Thank you for giving your time. We really
Thanks
appreciate
for your
it
friendship
here.
Over all these years.
You're a namaste.
Oh, namaste.
and namaste, that's for your people too, Bren.
You like me more than Bren, though, right?
I don't. Bren,
please,
I don't.
Like me more than Bren. Yeah, you've known me twice as long.
Yeah, of course,
it's,
I do.
It's only sexual.
No, with Bren.
He's into it. You're right. Now that Vinny's not hot anymore, you got Bren.
I like Bren's doing. I like him doing squats. I like the squats. He doesn't flip.
He does do exercises around you. The boys like to tease you.
Oh my God. All the boys like Bren. She wants to show photos of his stomach muscles, which she sends me all the time to my friends at Gay Coffee in the cast. They're like, who is that?
It's nice to get positive feedback.
Do keep listening to the show. We'll have a great guest on next week. And yes, please stop asking. I'm trying to include a more varied variety of people on the show. Relax. Don't get all woke with me. That's not what the show is about. I don't give a shit if you don't like the guests, or if you like if you think that their gender is wrong or they're not specific about their politics.
This is
fuck
good PR.
Right the fuck off.
Yeah,
this is
fuck
my
off,
show.
God.
Life's appointed my way and my guests' way. So thanks for tuning in and tune in again. Thank you very much.
I love your podcast. It's great.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. Oh, hi there. If you want to find this podcast on Twitter, you probably already have. But if you haven't, it's at Scott Capurro, ScottCapurro. It's the same address on Facebook, where I'll hopefully be downloading this podcast, and all over social media. So take care and see you next week. Thanks. Bye.